What's better in life than a bottle of wine, great food, and an amazing conversation?
My name is Kate Sullivan, and I am the host of To Dine For.
I'm a journalist, a foodie, a traveler with an appetite for the stories of people who are hungry for more. Dreamers, visionaries, artists, those who hustle hard in the direction they love. I travel with them to their favorite restaurant to hear how they did it. This show is a toast to them and their American dream. To Dine For, the podcast, is brought to you by American National, offering a broad suite of insurance solutions to protect what matters most to you. For 115 years, American National has remained committed to helping people and communities make a real difference in their lives. American National supports great local community organizations led by the kind of people you hear about on To Dine For. People who are inspired to make a difference and inspire others in return. American National's philosophy is helping where it's needed helps us all. For a description of the American National companies, the products they write, and the states in which they're licensed, visit americannational.com/dine. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Dine For, the podcast, where we meet the world's most creative and innovative minds at their favorite restaurant. On today's episode is Alex Jones.
If you told me, yeah, that you were going to work for 50 years, you were going to take all the money you'd saved and whatever, and it was all going to be gone and everybody was going to hate you, but that one person wasn't going to kill themselves, I'd say, well, I got to say yes to that. And like, maybe there's somebody else out there like that.
Alex Jones is the CEO and co-founder of Hallo, a Catholic startup focused on prayer, meditation, music, Bible, and sleep. The app launched just over 3.5 years ago, but has grown quickly and just crossed 1 billion minutes prayed, 8 million downloads, 170 million prayers prayed, 100,000 five-star reviews, and is considered the number one Catholic app in the world. Alex's story is really interesting, and I'm going to let him tell you it. But he was raised Catholic and fell away from his faith at a young age. But then something happened in his early adulthood that changed everything. Full disclosure, I am a University of Notre Dame graduate, proud, as is Alex. We are both Catholic, and I was really fascinated by his faith journey just as much as his startup journey. And that's what you see in this podcast today. I hope you'll enjoy my conversation with Alex Jones.
Hi, Alex. How are you?
I am living the dream. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I am so excited to dive into your journey because I've just been looking it over and it's really fascinating. So I can't wait to talk to you about all that you've been through and all that you've built. But I'm going to start this podcast the way I begin all my podcasts, which is by asking you your favorite restaurant. If you could take me to one, I know you live in the Chicago area, but you are from Columbus, Ohio. So you might take me back to Ohio. You might take me somewhere close to where you live now. If you could only take me one spot, where would it be?
There's a restaurant in downtown Chicago, Cortino, the Italian restaurant.
Yes.
I don't know if you've been there, but I'm a big fan of Cortino. And then I'm a pretty big fan of Vietnamese. So there's a pho place near me, which is, I'm in the west side in Elmhurst. So there's a pretty good place. Ming Chef, I think, is the recent one that we found that we like a lot. And then my team makes fun of me because I eat McDonald's probably too much. So they'll have to make sure that that's in the list. So
you and Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett eats there every day. Did you know that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably not good for you, but you know, such is life.
Yes, it's an American staple, right? Slice of Americana. Well, thank you for sharing those. I always say that someone's favorite restaurant is just like a little glimpse into something that they enjoy and something they love. I get the feeling that you work so hard that food is not a priority for you and that you have kind of built your life around hard work. So I want to dive into your career and kind of, if you could take me back to Ohio, and especially when you were a senior in high school, who did you want to be? What did you think you would do when you were going off to college?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So my parents were incredible. I was incredibly blessed growing up. My mom's a saint. My dad's a hero of mine. But I was a pretty crappy kid. So yeah, high school, I was pretty much...
Would you define crappy? Do you mean like you weren't very good in school? You went to Notre Dame, for God's sake.
No, I was lucky to be pretty good at taking tests, and I didn't work that hard in school, but I was lucky to be able to do well. You know, math kind of came easy to me, and those types of tests, standardized tests and stuff, kind of kind of came easy to me. But no, I was just, I mean, I wasn't, I was focused on the wrong things. I was involved in the wrong things, drugs, alcohol. You know, if I had a priority, it'd be girls and maybe baseball and sports. Okay. So baseball was kind of the, yeah, I was pretty focused on baseball for a while, but I wasn't good enough to play in college or anything like that. It was just what took my mind. But I didn't really have any like drive or ambition or hard work or anything like that. I just kind of did stuff because my parents made me and I'd get in trouble if I didn't. And yeah, so I was a pretty crappy kid. But so where I thought I would be as a senior, I have no idea. I don't think I thought about it at all.
That's a really honest answer and I appreciate it. And I know in any good story, there's always a twist and a turn and then suddenly something happened. So when you get out of Notre Dame and you get the job at McKinsey like so many other Notre Dame grads do, what was that experience like? And at what point did you say, maybe this isn't for me?
You know, I did develop a sense of ambition in school, so in college. And so I started working pretty hard, but mostly just for myself and for my own career. And so McKinsey, I loved McKinsey. I thought it was a phenomenal place to start a career. It was an incredible learning environment. You got to work on problems that were way too big and way too important for a 22-year-old to work on, which was awesome, a great learning experience. You get paid too much, so that was nice. And yeah, it was a great, it's a great career. It's an incredible firm. I love McKinsey and consulting generally. I'm a big fan of. But no, for me, it was mostly a spiritual journey. It was mostly my faith journey. So I had fallen away from my faith in high school and college and after I graduated. And I had gotten really into meditation when I started working at McKinsey. And, you know, part of it was because the job was stressful. And so it was a way to deal with the stress. But the bigger piece was I was just fascinated with whatever a spiritual experience meant or a contemplative life. I was just fascinated with the idea of contemplation and spirituality. And so I was about to go to India for a couple of weeks actually to learn how to meditate, but Headspace and Calm, which are kind of secular meditation apps that just launched, they're now massive, 100 million downloads, super popular. And they were way cheaper than the flight. And so I started using them every day. And I loved them. I thought they were great tools, ways to learn this technique of secular meditation within the comfort of your own home for 10 minutes before going to work. But for me, I kept having that. So secular meditation, you typically focus on your breath, mindful meditation, you focus on your breath and then you let your mind go. It's simplifying it dramatically, but it's kind of the core of it. And every time I would do that, my mind kept feeling pulled towards something spiritual, like an image of the cross, the name Jesus or something, which I thought was very strange because I would have considered myself agnostic. Mm-hmm. So I started reaching out to people thinking I had this really interesting question, which was, so I started talking to priests and monks and friends and everybody. And I was like, hey, I'm having this really weird experience. Is there any way that there's some sort of intersection here between this meditation thing and this faith thing? And they all laughed at me and said, yeah, we've been doing it for 2000 years. You probably should have heard about it. It's called prayer. And I was like, no. The prayer stuff I know. The prayer is the stuff that I memorized as a kid, or like asking God for stuff and talking to God or whatever, journaling maybe. But to me, that had always just felt like I was talking to myself or just going through the motions, and never like there was something on the other side that I was. Whereas this meditation thing, the funny thing about it is, you ask anybody who meditates seriously for like a year, it doesn't take that long. You ask anybody who meditates seriously, and you might be alone in the room. There's no other people there with you. And you ask, are you alone? And the answer is no, for sure not. There's something else there. And it's this really weird experience. And it doesn't matter what religious background you come from. But for me, you know, that meditation thing had really felt like I was, like there was a relationship with something else. And so I started learning about this whole world of Christian meditation and contemplative prayer that I'd really never heard of before. I mean, there's dozens and dozens and dozens of different techniques to try to learn to not just talk to God, but really listen to him, and what it means to, like, when you sit in that meditation, you feel something else there. Like, how do you have a conversation with God there? Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I sat down. One of them is a way to meditate using scripture. It's called Lectio Divina. There's a bunch of different ways to meditate, but I Googled how to do it, randomly opened up a Bible to Matthew 6, which is where the disciples asked Jesus to teach them how to pray, funnily enough. And in Lectio Divina, you pick a word that sticks out. So in meditation, you focus on your breath. And in Lectio Divina, you pick a word that sticks out that you feel is calling to you from scripture. And the word that stuck out was hallow in the Our Father. So Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I meditated on that word for a bit, and it was just 10 minutes, just in my living room. And it just completely changed my life, brought me to tears, brought me back to my faith, changed everything, made me do this crazy startup thing, leave this great job and go into massive credit card debt and drain my 401k for a 40% penalty and all this crazy stuff. But the thing, it was this deep sense of peace, which you can kind of feel in meditation, but combined with this like depth of meaning and purpose, like you were wrestling with something real. So hallow means to make holy. And so I was like, well, is God trying to make me holy? Am I letting him make me holy? Am I supposed to be helping other people grow? Am I supposed to be serving other people? And frankly, I was just doing my own career for my own career's sake. And so the answers were really big, stressful, like no's. I was not doing any of this. But I was wrestling with it in this deep place of peace. So anyway, you know, I knew that I liked this structure of this app. And I knew how to code a little bit. And so we built the first version of it selfishly just for me because I wanted to do this type of thing for the rest of my life. And I couldn't find a resource that, you know, had this type of structure. And so that was the only thing that pulled me away from McKinsey. So it wasn't, you know, I love McKinsey. It's a great job, but it doesn't quite match working for Jesus. So it's...
That was not the answer that I expected. So
yeah, sorry, that's a bit of a longer one.
No, it was fantastic. So let me get this straight. You were meditating initially at McKinsey really just to handle stress, right? And it wasn't until you started to really meditate that you started to have images of the cross that pulled you. And we should explain to people, there is a big difference between meditation and prayer because people do meditate to clear their mind and they may not have any connection or feel any connection to the other side, or maybe they do, but that is not perhaps their intent. Their intent might be just to relieve stress. But what you're talking about is something deeper. It's a connection to God. It's a connection to the other side that you really felt pulled towards. Am I getting the story correct?
Yeah. You know, it was also this kind of fascination with spirituality. So it was both kind of a stress thing and a fascination with spirituality.
But you had never had that fascination prior, right? It wasn't in college or wasn't in, obviously in high school, you said that was not the case of your life in high school. So was there anything that triggered it other than, you know, you had a stressful job? Or where did the fascination with spirituality begin? Was it in the meditative place that you started?
It's a really interesting question. I guess, you know, stress might have been kind of the first mover there where you're like, well, I'm kind of stressed. So how do I go try to deal with the stress? Meditation comes up. But then the idea of meditation, I don't know, what fascinated me about it was a lot deeper than just the stress relief. Like the idea of a monk just sitting and like, you know, I mean, a lot of the secular meditation has roots in Eastern practices, which is, right, you know, a very deep spirituality in and of itself. And so like the idea of that contemplative life and whatever they were like growing towards or trying to achieve, which is not the right way to think about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just fascinated me. It's like, what does a monk do all day? Like that's a fascinating thing. Like you can just, what are you trying to do in your mind and in your heart? And so, I don't know, there was something really interesting. I can't really pinpoint what it was. It wasn't just the stress. It was kind of the whole lifestyle of like growing deeper spiritually that seemed pretty interesting. And I think it's something that pulls a lot of folks, like even folks who may have fallen away from faith or would consider themselves not religious, there's still this kind of interest in spirituality and this fascination with spirituality that I think, you know, is tough to let go of.
You mentioned having that experience with the word hallow, right? You're meditating. Yeah. That was the word that called to you. And then you really had a religious experience in that moment. At what point after that religious experience, do you get the idea for the app?
Oh, I had been using Headspace and Calm every day forever. So this was just like a substitute. I mean, it was so obvious of an idea. It's not even really an idea to anybody. It's just like, it was beat over my head. So I was using this every day. I had this new type of way to spend this 10 minutes in silence. I Googled how to do it because I couldn't find a resource to listen to or an app or anything. And then I finished and I was like, I need this every day. I can't do the Headspace and Calm thing anymore because this thing has changed my life. And it wasn't just like, oh, this is a better technique. It was like, I don't know, it feels cheesy or whatever, but it's like, you feel like you're building a relationship with something, which is, mm-hmm, I would argue true, but there's a person there. It's like falling in love with somebody. It's like, you're my wife. It's like, you know, I need to do that every day. There's nothing, you know, even if it's a waste of time or it's a waste of money or whatever, it's like, no, but I need to go text her every day. Like I need to go try to spend time with her. And that was the same thing with God. It was like, I don't know what that was, but it was this beautiful feeling of love. And so it's like, I just need to try to do that every day. And it was always kind of interesting to me. Entrepreneurship was, was always something that I was interested in and always fascinated by technology, and was an engineering undergrad, and so knew a little bit about it. And so it wasn't super intimidating trying to code a first version of the app, but it was certainly poorly done, but I was arrogant enough to think I could do it. So.
Okay. And then obviously you're going to Stanford Business School. They're really amazing school at the idea of entrepreneurship and introducing it and kind of going through the model. So like that, those seeds were planted too before you had this experience. I'm wondering, when you first start out, how was the idea received? Talk to me about that first, you know, the first year of trying to kind of bring the idea to life. How was it received?
You know, in Silicon Valley is funny because Silicon Valley really wants like contrarian ideas, and prayer in Silicon Valley is very contrarian. Yeah, because it's not the norm, certainly, in Silicon Valley to pray. So it was very odd in Silicon Valley. It was, honestly, it was weird for everybody, though. Like, you don't need it. You know, and it's still, we get a bunch of reactions like this. You don't need an app to pray. Certainly not. Of course, you don't need an app to pray. You can pray whenever, however you want. You can pray in silence. You know, it's like the idea of technology and faith and audio guided stuff. I mean, there's just a bunch of pieces that people, my mom, when I first told her about it, she hates when I tell this story, but she was, you know, she took her faith super seriously. So she was incredibly happy that I was coming back to my faith.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, that's great. Like, awesome. But this is a bad idea. I would never use this thing. I pray every day and I don't know why would I ever use this? Like, I pray with my Bible and I close my eyes and I pray. And I was like, yeah, that's totally fine. You know, honestly, for me, it didn't really matter though, because I was just making it for me. I wasn't, you know, trying to build some market or something, or like get a bunch of downloads or whatever. It was just for me. And so what ended up happening actually is, it is one of those things where you have to kind of try it. Yeah. And I now, having taken my faith seriously for, you know, 5-6 years or whatever, would certainly relate. It's like, well, I have a great prayer life. It's of silence and all this stuff. Why would I need something like this? But, you know, it's just this opportunity. Like, you essentially get to go on a retreat each morning for 10 minutes with the best retreat leaders in the world. And it's just, and there's something about the audio guided nature of it. That's like, if I look at a screen or a computer and I try to pray or meditate, it just like takes me out of it. It's maybe the blue light or something, but it's right. Like, there's something about technology that takes me out of it. And there's something about the app that's like, you press play, you close your eyes, and you're just like, it's like there's somebody there with you, but you're just, Yes. It's like technology without technology. So
it's the beauty of a podcast. It's when you're listening to a podcast, you don't see the person, right? So you're not like analyzing, do I like this person? I like what they're wearing. You're actually immersed in the conversation. That's the beauty of a podcast. It's the same with your app. It's like, you're allowed to kind of travel to another place. Also, we get stuck in the same thoughts. And so to have another voice come in and guide you through a meditation or a prayer, there's something to that.
Yeah, no, 100%. So anyway, my mom ended. My mom now uses it like way more than I do, which is I use it every day. But and she sends us whenever there's a bug or anything. So, you know, it was a fascinating kind of initial experience. But frankly, so we started using it. We built it. There was a group of a couple of us. And then some friends and family were interested in it. And so they wanted to try it. And there was only like a couple dozen people. And there was only like not like a dozen sessions or so on the app. Now there's like 10,000, 20,000 or whatever. But in just those couple sessions, we got like all these incredible stories. Actually, there's this one story. My aunt was one of the early people to use the app, and she took her faith incredibly seriously, but she was just supportive and she wanted to try the app. But her son had just passed away. He was 45 years old. Tragic story, actually. He went to the doctor, said his chest was hurting, and they said, you're fine, go home. And he went home and died in sleep. He had just gotten married. His wife had just gotten pregnant. It was heartbreaking. And anyway, she was heartbroken, obviously, as she would be. And we have this big family and we're all trying to figure out, like, you know, she's not eating, she's not getting out of bed. What can we do? And she sent us this note after using the app for a couple of days. And she just said, hey, it was Christmas. It was Advent. So it was Christmas time. And she said, hey, I just wanted to let you know that this season, I always face it with dread. I got to go get a bunch of gifts and figure out how to travel all my grandkids and do all this stuff. And I just wanted to, I didn't think I'd be able to make it through my first Christmas without my son. And I just wanted to let you know that these little meditations on this app have reminded me that I'm able to have hope and peace even in the darkest of times. And so I just wanted to thank you for that. And it was just like, I didn't know she was using it. I didn't, you know, we didn't write meditations for that. It was just little, you know, Christmas meditations or whatever. And, you know, I broke down on the floor, just like totally in tears. And I remember I went to my co-founder and we were getting a drink at a bar. And I was like, look, I don't know, because at this point we started to maybe think about you know, maybe we were going to work on this like for real. And I was like, I don't know if this thing's going to work. I don't know what like retention rates we're going to have or economics or any of that, how we're going to make it sustainable, how big it's going to be, whatever. But like, man, if we spent the next 50 years and we wasted all our money and like our reputations were ruined and everything, and we got that one note, I would have done it again.
Wow.
And like, maybe there's somebody else out there like that.
Yes.
And that's what like the really cool part about Allo is, like, we have this tremendous blessing to get to journey with people. You know, a lot of people who take their faith seriously, a lot of people who have fallen away or are of different faiths, but are just interested in exploring Christian spirituality, whatever that means. But a lot of people who are in like really, really tough places, like the darkest, toughest parts of their lives. And they send us these notes about just how God's able to reach out to them just in silence, just like letting them know that they're loved and they're cared for. And he just changes their lives. And it's just this miracle for us to be able to be a part of. So anyway, that's for us. But I mean, you'll get a bunch of negative stuff and a bunch of positive stuff, especially at the beginning. The vast majority of people don't believe in it. But there was just a couple of those that were like, well, I don't really care about the numbers. That seems like there's maybe something worth it there.
And there's a nugget there for, you know, people when they're trying to determine the trajectory of their career. You know, what would you do if money was no object? And what would you do in service to the world, right? Like, you were guided by something so much bigger than creating a company or making money, correct?
Yeah. And entrepreneurship is just so hard. Like, a startup is just, you know, the staring into the abyss, chewing glass thing. I mean, it's just really, really hard. And it's just a constant uphill battle. And it could collapse at any point, and the vast majority of startups do. And it's just like, it's really hard to do. And you're going to work on it for like at least 10 years. So right. If things go well, like that's a long time. I mean, I'd never worked on anything for more than whatever. I guess I went to college for 4 years and I was at McKinsey for a couple of years, but 10 years. So then you're like, okay, well, am I going to do this for a number? Am I going to do this for some, because you could make more money doing something else on a risk adjusted basis or whatever you're talking about. Like, and numbers or people's perception of you, none of that is going to give you meaning. It's like, I would be blown away. If you told me 5 years ago that 1,000 people were using this thing, I'd say you're crazy. That's insane.
Really? Really? That would have been like a dream come 1,000
people?
True.
That's a ton of people. Like, if I looked outside and I saw 1,000 people, that is a ton of people. If I went to a building and there was a room full of 1,000 people using this app, I'd be like, wow, that is a lot of people using this app. That's crazy. I mean, it's just for me. But if there was 10,000 people, I'd be like, wow, that is even more people than that. 100,000 people, I'd be like, I can't tell the difference between 10,000 and 100,000, 1 million, 10 million, 20 million. And so then it's like, okay, well, how do you work on something that's really, really hard forever? And right. I mean, like, there was a woman who wrote us who was suicidal, who was about to kill herself, and was this deeply, deeply tough part of her life. Husband left her, kids, it took the kids. It was this terrible situation. And she somehow, God healed her and put her back together again. And their family got back together and all this incredible stuff. It was this beautiful miracle. And she just wrote to us and said, hey, I just wanted to let you know that I think I would have killed myself had it not been for the grace that God gave me through this app. And I was like, what?
Well, what's God, better what than this? Blessing. What's better than that? Right.
No, there's nothing better than that. And you could work, if you told me, yeah, that you were going to work for 50 years, you were going to take all the money you'd saved and whatever, and it was all going to be gone and everybody was going to hate you, but that one person wasn't going to kill themselves, I'd say, well, I got to say yes to that.
Yep.
But yes, of course. And that's just, it's just so, it can keep you going through so much, and you need it.
We'll have more on this conversation in just a minute, but first, thank you to our sponsors.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
To Dine For, the podcast, is brought to you by American National, offering a broad suite of insurance solutions to protect what matters most to you.
There's a funny thing about most insurance commercials, whether they feature lizards or birds or funny cartoon characters. It seems like they want you to think about anything but insurance. American National, on the other hand, has real local agents who get to know you, so they can help you reach better decisions about your insurance to make sure you're protecting what matters most to you. American National agents are part of your community. They're your neighbors. So whether it's solutions for your home, your small business, your farm, or your life, you can count on your local American National agent to make sure you get the discounts you deserve and the protection you need without paying for extras you don't. With American National, you get an ally, not just a web page. For a description of the American National companies, the products they write, in the states in which they're licensed, visit americannational.com/dine. Now back to our conversation.
So now you have all these amazing testimonials, right? And you know the power of what you're doing because you have proof of it. But back when you were trying to raise venture capital, when you're trying to get this off the ground, was there a moment or was there something that happened that was like a true catalyst for you where you said, whoa, we might be onto something?
Yeah, honestly, it was just those. So the biggest thing was just these notes. It was just these individual notes. Everything for, I'd like to say, you know, we're not like a Facebook that like takes off like a rocket ship, but I guess everything is kind of like, it looks like a rocket ship in retrospect. But, you know, we're growing really quickly. We're incredibly blessed, but it's kind of just, it's felt like you just keep stringing together like singles and doubles. Right. Like you just keep getting a little bit better. You just keep getting hits. You keep getting on base, whatever. And for us, it's been those testimonials that you get that are the real spikes. Now, when you look back, it's like, wow, that's crazy. Like 17, 18 million downloads, whatever. We're at 150 countries, 400 million. Like all those things are crazy. That's awesome. But it's just kind of, you're stringing together these things. And the real catalyst for us, or the real, like when we knew we were onto something, was when we see what God does in people's lives. And the thing is, it's not like we're onto something. It's not like we're doing something really cool. All we're doing is like helping people to take 10 minutes and just sit in silence. And God does these incredible things through it. I mean, we had this young woman who wrote to us, who, I have a little 3-year-old daughter, so this breaks my heart. But she wrote to us and said, hey, I've never heard anybody tell me that I was beautiful in my life. She was a teenager. She was a young adult. And so that's obviously heartbreaking. It's like, you should tell your daughter she's beautiful every day.
Right.
And she said, I've never heard it from anybody tell me that I'm beautiful. And I plugged in this app for the first time and I looked in the mirror and I heard in a silent meditation, you are beautifully and wonderfully made. Do you think I make mistakes? Mm-hmm. And she just like breaks down in tears. It's the first time she's heard anybody tell her she was beautiful. And it's just like, what a tremendous. So anyway, that for us is what's like kept us going throughout everything. The funny thing about startup land for me, and the only real thing that I've learned, like our, especially the early rounds, because the early rounds of fundraising are the hardest for sure.
Right.
Like the seed round, because there's so many funds, there's so many different people you can meet with. I probably met with 80, 90 people. You want to do it in like this way that generates excitement. So you do it in this like batched way. So I met within like 2 weeks with like 89 people.
Oh my gosh. In two weeks, you met with 80 to 90
possible
investors.
It was like 7 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Oh my gosh.
Very little sleep. You're okay. Traveling. This was pre-COVID. So you're traveling around to see people. You're flying to New York, whatever.
What's the feedback? And what are they saying?
Oh, no.
Okay.
And they're just judging you, which is the sad part.
Because
and for me, this is like my, you know, this is the core of my identity now.
Right.
Is this story of what God's done in my life. And so it's they're just judging, like, well, are you sitting up straight enough? Are you making enough eye contact?
Right.
You're like, are your answers compelling enough? Do I think this is a good idea?
Or are you charismatic enough? Yes.
Yeah. Because you have no numbers, you have no anything. So they're just judging you, which, you know, is right on them. You just have to choose whether you want to back the entrepreneur, because you can't possibly guess at what's going to happen in the future. And so you meet with 80 people. And if you're lucky, 5 say yes, or 5 are interested, maybe 5 to 10. That's like a really great round. And that means you get 70 no's. And the no's all come like right away. And the yeses take a couple weeks. And so it's just no, 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 no. You just get no, 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 no. After meeting, it's just, and the list, you just watch this list of 80 things. And you're just like, it's down to 70 now. It's down to 50. It's down to 4. And we really needed this. Like, we were broke. We spent all our money. We're going to have to go get regular jobs. You know, future fundraisers, it's like, well, you know, maybe you can lean harder into this or not, but it's hopefully you're building an economically sustainable thing regardless, so it's default alive. But this one is like, no, you can't just keep spending your wife's salary on this thing.
Sure.
And so anyway, I remember I went back to my little studio apartment in the valley, in Silicon Valley. And I sat down and I was like, all right, I might as well pray. I'm doing a prayer app. I should try praying. And I was praying and I was just like, got into kind of this nice, like, recollected state with a handful of different techniques or whatever. But then I just started talking to God and I was like, look, God, this is, I was 25 years old. My like back had knotted. I like had like four or five different like knots in my back, my neck. I couldn't turn it to one direction. My heart was like tight. Like it felt like my heart was tight.
Yeah,
and I was like, what stress. Is like, I'm just killing myself with stress.
Yeah.
And I remember I was like, look, I can't do this. I don't know who you thought you were picking for this, but I can't do this thing. It's too much weight. It's too much stress. It's too much. I just can't possibly handle this. I'm going to make a deal with you and I'm going to promise you that if this thing works out, you're going to get the credit. If it's successful, I'm never going to trick myself into thinking I'm some successful entrepreneur or some guy who figured it all out or whatever it is. I know that you're the one doing it. I'm never going to trick myself into thinking I'm the one doing it. You're always going to get the credit, I promise.
Mm.
At the same time, if the thing doesn't work out, it's on you. It's not on me. And I'm not going to take the weight. That's fine. That's fine. You know, if you want it to inspire somebody else to do something, you want it to teach me a lesson so that I can do something else with my life, or maybe it reaches the one person it was supposed to, whatever it is, that's totally fine. It's your thing. If it doesn't work out, that's totally fine. If it all goes up in flames, that's totally fine. It's your thing. And like from that moment, it was just this immediate weight off my shoulders.
Mm.
And the next morning I went to meet with a guy, Chad Sousa Ventures, one of the best investors. It was our second meeting. We loved the first meeting. He's an incredible guy. He's one of our favorite guys. I was late to the meeting, so I went and grabbed a cup of coffee and I was reading the Daily Gospel. And it was Peter trying to fish and there's no fish in the sea. And Jesus says, hey, let down your nets.
Sure.
And Peter's like, what are you talking about? I've been fishing all day. There's no fish out here. I was like, I've been trying to fundraise all day. There's no investors. Everybody's going to say no.
It's
gone from
right?
80 down to 10 and they're all going to go to zero. And he goes, just let down your net. And Peter catches more fish than he can carry. And 2 minutes later, the Chad guy gives us a term sheet and we get four more in the next like 2 days. And so it was just like this. The funny thing for me is it was, and I guess that's the catalyst, but it's just the learning for me is just this radical, which from a spiritual perspective is really the journey. It's just learning to surrender to God and to love in your heart. And when you do that, it's like, it's funny how tactical he's worked in Hallow's history. And that was just one example of like me stressing about doing it myself and then finally letting go. And then him just doing it for me. So anyway, that's been the real catalyst.
Yeah, no, that's a great story. Talk about getting ready for a haul, right? You were letting down your nets and there you go. I also think getting to a part of your story, like by me asking you, like, what were you like in high school? And you being so transparent, you're like, I wasn't that great of a student. I didn't even have any ambition. Like your transparency is showing that you were not like the model person to be an entrepreneur, to take this to the level that it is now, right? And so like you're in a way, you're kind of making good on your promise, because I have interviewed many an entrepreneur who I know gloss over the details of their life that are not the best. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because in no way comparing myself to St. Paul, but St. Paul is, he's persecuting, actively murdering Christians. And then, God changes him into St. Paul. And, he says, I'm not going to quote this exactly, so please forgive me, but it's, look, God did this with me. He chose me because of how terrible I was as the example, so that it would be so clear that it was him doing it. And like, I've never done anything like this before. I've never been an entrepreneur before. I've never started anything. I didn't know how to code an app. I had to take a little course online to code an app. I don't have a theology degree. There's like 1,000 better people he could have picked. And I was a piece of crap. But he does. And it's funny, like when we think about our team's actually phenomenal. We've built a really phenomenal team, but it's just a bunch of kind of us ragtag group of people that have never done anything like this before. And it's like, man, isn't it crazy that God chose this group of people to do this type of thing? And maybe, maybe it all collapses tomorrow. Again, it's all up to God, so that's totally fine. But I think it brings to light, and even like in the doing it, there's just so much like growth that I need as a, like learning how to be a CEO for the first time and all this jazz. But yeah, it just shows like how clearly he is the one doing it. It's not like it takes some Elon Musk or some great entrepreneur. It's like, no, God is the one doing this thing. And we're just here screwing it up every once in a while. And then when we step back long enough for him to fix it, he fixes it. And that's pretty much it.
What year did you start Halo? Halo, sorry. I'm sure a lot of people say Halo, right? Because they're not familiar with the word Halo.
I mean, actually, Colbert was making fun of. So Mark Wahlberg is one of our content partners.
Yes, I saw the ad in the Super Bowl. It was amazing.
He was incredible. He's an incredible guy to work with. But yeah, he went on Colbert, and Colbert's the whole conversation was just Colbert saying, "Hey, you know, it's confusing that it's called Halo, but the logo is a halo, but it's not pronounced Halo." It's like, yeah.
I know. I have to train my brain. I'm like, it is Halo. No, it is Halo. It is Halo. See?
Halo, like aloe vera.
Right. Yeah. Well, hallowed be thy name. That's very easy to remember. So I'm really interested, you know, you've done a really great job of kind of taking me through this. At what point do you move to Chicago? Because you were in Silicon Valley. Was that an intentional move? And did you feel like this was the right place, like meaning Chicago, because I live in the outskirts of Chicago as well. Like, was this the place that you wanted to build this company, or what caused the move?
Yeah, we had been out in the Bay Area for grad school, my wife and I. We had always kind of intended to move back to the Midwest. Frankly, the Bay Area is incredible. I mean, it's like the best weather in the history of the world. And we lived our whole lives in the Midwest, and we went out to California for 2 years, and we're like, oh, we'll be fine. We come back, and you're just like, wait, you don't see the sun for 4 months? You just get so sad. I feel so bad for people who are raised in California and then have to come to the Midwest for school or something. It's just like this radical shock. And it's funny, like, you think you're such a evolved adult, but it's just like, no, you just get sad when you don't see the sun. It's just like, you just feel sad.
Oh yeah. Sad is real.
Yeah. But no, so we have family out here, and at that point, the team was like five people. It was right in COVID. But yeah, so we had family here, and there was another person who was out in California with me, but he also had family in Chicago. And so then the other three folks were in Chicago. So it was kind of for the five of us, Chicago made the most sense. And yeah, there's a bunch of great faith-based organizations in the Midwest, and it's kind of nice to be able to get to New York and LA easily. And I think the tech scene in Chicago is great. There's a lot of really incredible, you know, founders and startups who gave us a lot of great advice, and a lot of great investors who were blessed enough to be able to work with. So, and it kind of helped to like remove a little bit from like the Silicon Valley craziness.
That's what I was wondering. I wondered if that was part of it, you know, like if you wanted to get a little bit more towards your Midwest roots and wondered, you know, kind of Chicago is an amazing community and it's much smaller, right? Much, much smaller and more tight knit. And I didn't know if that was an advantage for you. But thank you for kind of taking me through the process there.
Yeah. And yeah, the craziness of Silicon Valley can kind of just take over and like grow at all costs and spend money like you're crazy and do all this stuff. And we were never really like that. And so for us, it was, you know, we want to build something that's great and that's world-class and like aspire to the, you know, the best design in the world and the best app functionality in the world and the best technology and the best content in the world, but to do it in like a responsible and less kind of out there way. And so Chicago kind of helped us to build that. So yeah, it was super helpful.
And how has the Catholic community either supported you, or what has been the outreach and the conversation like? Because, you know, obviously, you know, the Catholic Church is not known for being the most technologically advanced or progressive organization. So I'm just wondering, like, how have they supported you, or how have they not?
Yeah, actually, the church itself has been incredible. You know, I think they all are intimately aware that, you know, technology is maybe not the core of what the church's strength is. And you know, this has been since John Paul II was Pope, sent for forever, the church has pushed on lay people to really go out and try to do work like this. That isn't just, hey, we have to rely on priests and bishops and nuns to do all the work. It's like, no, when people think of the church traditionally, they think of like a bank. It's like, oh, well, I'm a member at a bank. And the church is just a group of people. It's not an institution. There's legal entities, there's whatever, there's like real estate and there's all this stuff. But the church at its core is just a group of people. Everybody is a part of the church just as much as a priest or a bishop is. Now there's different roles and responsibilities. But so I think we're all called, especially as lay people, to, especially within areas like technology or something that's moving real quick, to try to do what we can to help the church. And for us, like the feedback that we've gotten is just the church has had, you know, a tough last 40, 50 years. I mean, it's been, you know,
we could go on and on. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the idea or the fact that there's some bright spot, and there's a few of them, but the fact that there's some bright spot, some light, can give, you know, and especially the job of being a priest, you know, especially like a good priest is just mm-hmm. people don't trust you with their kids. There's, right. you've got this, like a priest who's 50 has had the last like 30 years where they're just like, it's just been a tough, really tough 30 years for good priests who are just trying to, and good nuns just trying to do their jobs. And like the thing is going down into the right and you're just kind of, yeah, it's been a tough go of it. And so to find light, and for us, the really nice part, you know, a local church, you might have one really incredible story that comes from the church or somebody who's in a really tough time who finds God, come from the church that you hear like once a year, maybe once every couple months or something. But for us, we just have, you know, we just get note after note after note of these incredible stories of what God is doing in people's lives. And it can feel so often in our world like you're like, everything is going down. Like everything is bad. The news is always bad. Twitter is always hating on somebody. Everything is always wrong. And there's like, what is good? Like, where is the good? And that's not a great news article. So you don't, you know, you don't get, it doesn't get clicks. And so you're not going to do it, but except this podcast, which congratulations, but the, you know, we have this tremendous blessing to get to receive all these good things that God is doing. And it's just thousands and thousands of things of people's lives being changed. And so for us to get to share that with the church, and the church is, you know, we're just a small part of the church. And like, we're just a small part of your spiritual life. We're just a small part of your spiritual journey. And for us, it's, you know, leading people back into physical church communities and their local pastor and a relationship that matters in that local community is incredibly important for us. So we certainly in no means try to replace that. And actually our lowest usage day is on Sunday every week. Mm. And then it spikes back up on Monday. So it's, you know, for us, we're just trying to be as helpful a tool for the church as we can. And yeah, they've actually been tremendously supportive, which has been a blessing.
Can you share a little bit about your marketing vision? Obviously, we kind of touched on the fact that there was this amazing ad that you did with Mark Wahlberg. But Holy Week is coming up. Easter is coming up, which I imagine is like your Super Bowl. What kind of plans do you have specifically for Holy Week? Or can you give us a sense of like, how do you market an app like this?
Yeah, for us. So, you know, my own story was I had fallen away from my faith and came back to it through this spirituality and discovering the spirituality. And for us, that's really the core. Like I said, it's a blessing to get to pray with everybody or meditate with everybody who's interested. But for us, really, the core is reaching out to the folks who have most fallen away, the people who are in the toughest spots. Mm. And so when we think about really anything we do, but when we think about marketing, that's really what it is. It's like, how do you get, we're not really focused on the people who are Googling Catholic stuff or Googling Christian stuff or Googling Bible verses. What we're focused on is the person who's scrolling TikTok or watching the Super Bowl or whatever, who would never otherwise have encountered the love of God, and to bring them that in some way. And so the question there is like, okay, well, how do you get somebody, you know, a 20-year-old in college to stop for half a second while they're scrolling TikTok for the 12th hour? And it's like, well, you got to have something that's really great. I mean, it's, you've got to have great marketing. Marketing's really hard, and you got to have a message that's awesome. You got to have content that's great. You got to have creators. And Mark does an incredible job. Jonathan Rumi from The Chosen, Father Mike. You've got a bunch of people who do incredible jobs of reaching out to these people and like being like, hey, why don't you stay prayed up? Or, you know, it's something that's weird, or, you know, Mark jumping in an ice bath and doing a sign of the cross or something. So there's a bunch of things that, you know, in terms of marketing, that you just try a bunch of different things to reach out to people who have fallen away. And some things work and some things don't. For us, the core is, it's always just like, for marketing, really, the best way for us to show what Hallow is and the best way for us to invite you to Hallow is just to do a session together. So, you know, that's what the Super Bowl ad was. It was just Mark praying and Jonathan praying. It was just, you know, a prayer. And so it's just like, yeah, let's just take a half a second and pray. Can we just hit, you're scrolling, just take half a second and pray real quick. And then if you want to dive deeper, and my guess is we give the heavy lifting to God. So we just say, hey, we're just going to get them to stop for like 5 seconds. You try to tell them something important. And then, you know, maybe they'll download the app and grow closer. For Holy Week, yeah, we've got a lot of really great stuff. We've got a lot of content launching for Good Friday, which is a big spike for us. And we're still in the middle of this Lenten challenge, which is the season leading up to Easter. The last 2 weeks, we'll be going through like a journey to the cross with Jim Caviezel, Jeff Cavins, a lot of really incredible folks. And then for Easter, we're going to be doing this challenge on the church, the early church. So the early church fathers, which is just a really fast, there's a lot of, and women, actually, there's a lot of really incredible men and women in the early church, like the couple hundred years right after Christ. And they have a lot of really incredible writings, and it's, you know, the story of Mary Magdalene and of Mary, the mother of God, and all these things are just really, really awesome. So we're going to be trying to spend, I think it's like 21 days or something, journeying through that this Easter, which kind of follows the, you know, Jesus rises and then the early church begins. So it'll be fun.
It's really interesting because one would think that you would try to target the millions and millions of people who are Christian and Catholic. But what you're telling me from a marketing plan is it's very different. It's actually, you're targeting the lost. You're targeting the people who perhaps were, you're targeting yourself where you were, where you were really needing Jesus and really maybe unsure of where to go. To me, it seems your marketing seems more mission-based than it is sales-based 100%.
I mean, our marketing is primarily the way that we, like, the really cool stuff happens. I mean, we have bishops on the app, we have monks on the app, we have people who are doing holy hours every day, who are going to church every day on the app. We have a bunch of people on the app, and it's, you know, I'm on the app and I take my faith super seriously, and I am always going to want like a great app. And so it's an honor to get to pray with those folks. And honestly, that, you know, people are going to Google Christian and Catholic stuff anyway. For us though, the focus really is, because I think spirituality has this unique ability to reach out to people who might not, you know, want to go to church or want to go to confession or want to do, you know, any of the really intense stuff that comes with Christianity. And to just say, hey, like, you're interested in spirituality. Most folks are. Maybe you're interested in finding peace. Maybe you're, you know, alone. Maybe you're struggling with something. Let us introduce you to this spirituality thing. I think you'll love it. I think it'll be awesome. And I think it'll actually, you'll talk to the same guy that I'm talking to, and he'll tell you the same stuff that he's telling me. That's just a guess. But, and he's going to do a lot better job of telling, if what I believe is true, he's going to do a lot better job of telling you that stuff than I ever would. And so let's just sit in silence and talk to him together. And we've just seen, you know, it's a really compelling pitch for people who might have otherwise never taken religion seriously. But B, it's just, you just have so much incredible, you open up the door for God to do these really incredible things in people's lives. And so it's really cool to see. And frankly, that's, you know, like I said, like, there's 2 billion Christians in the world. Let's say a few hundred million really take their faith super seriously, or super dedicated, have a really deep relationship with God, pray every day. That's awesome. If I can help some of those folks, if we can help some of those folks, that'll be a tremendous blessing. But relative to someone who's about to take their own life, or someone who's never heard that they're beautiful before, or someone who's, you know, struggling with the loss of a son, or someone who's in just a really dark place, like, that one person, that I can do forever. I can work forever to get to that one person who's lost. And it's just, and the other stuff comes with it, which is, but yeah, for us, the focus is really reaching out to the folks who are in the toughest places.
You said at the very beginning you were reaching towards something spiritual, but you didn't quite know what it was. And obviously, this, as you said, this is a faith journey. What would you say to someone who's scratching their head, listening, have gotten to this part of the podcast and hearing your story? What would you say that faith has given you?
That's a really beautiful question. So I think there's a few answers to it. The first is, like, what have I gotten from it? And, like, words wouldn't do it justice. I mean, I have this tremendous sense of peace in what is by far the most stressful job I've ever, like, 10 orders of magnitude more stressful than I've ever experienced. I have this tremendous sense of peace. I have this, like, real meaning and purpose. Like, I don't ever question what I'm doing or whether I'm supposed to be doing the right, like, I have this real purpose in my life. I am hopefully growing a lot in love. It's the only point of prayer, is to try to love better. And so I have done, and discipline, and, you know, the virtues that you try to grow in as a Christian. Fatherhood to me is, like, a tremendous blessing in the eyes of faith. Like, it's just this, it's this incredible, 2 little kids and one on the way. It's just this, like, beautiful joy. And actually, there's this prayer technique, the examine at the end of the day, where you reflect on, like, the moments you're most grateful for, and you try to go back and live in those moments a little bit more. And there's this incredible thing that happens when you start reflecting on what you're grateful for, which is the things actually get better. Like, you're then in that, like, I reflect on the day and it's like, yeah, Hallow might have had a great day or a terrible day, but I got a little hug from my daughter where she said, Dad, I love you. And that's still the best part. It doesn't matter what happened in the day. That was still the best part. Like, Mark Wahlberg comes and gives me a high five. It's like, no, my daughter giving me a hug is still, like, 10 times better. And the next time my daughter gives me a hug, I'm going to be like, you know what, this is, at the end of the day, this is going to be my favorite moment. Mm-hmm. And there's, it, like, stretches out those moments. It makes the moments that are great so much bigger. And then it takes the moments that suck, that are really bad, and it gives them meaning. Like, suffering in Christianity has this tremendous meaning. You can offer it up to people. And Christ is, like, giving you this moment to grow. He's giving you this moment as an opportunity to grow closer to him. And so suffering, even the really bad parts, take on this tremendous meaning. But so, like, it changed my life dramatically. Like, I am really happy. And so it's given me all these things. But I think prayer, the funny thing about prayer is like, it is not about, and this, I get the question, like, how can you know that prayer works, or what do you get out of prayer, meditation, or any of that stuff? The funny thing about Christianity is it is not at all about what you get. It is about what you give and about what God gets from you. And so ultimately the goal is to die to yourself, like to completely die. Everything that you care about, everything that you love, dead, gone, and to give it all to God. And he then gives you it all back like times 10. But the goal is to surrender everything to him and to give him your heart so that he can transform it into a heart of real love. And so the goal is ultimately not like, well, what do you get out of Christ, or what do you get out of prayer? But how can God, like, just how can you sit still, give him 10 minutes, give him 20 minutes so that he can change your life? And he's changing, he's getting out of you what he needs to get out of you. And then he gives you this tremendous blessing. He gives you this tremendous life. And sometimes it's hard and sometimes it's easy and there's ups and downs and, you know, life, suffering doesn't go away, but it takes on this tremendous new light. And so the death to yourself and the surrender to God, which is actually Lent, the journey that we're going through, which was pretty intense. It's a pretty intense, like, it's about as intense as you get. It's like, well, yeah, you have to die and you have to surrender everything to God. There's no, like, you can't hold on to anything. You can't hold on to your little chocolate in the morning, or the coffee or whatever. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's insane. And you have to give it all to God. But that is actually, and when I say like the really tough parts get better, that is how it gets better, because the tough parts are his. You're like, okay, look, I don't understand everything that's going on always, but I know you got what's best for me. And I know you're a lot better at this than I am. Like, we're terrible at planning our lives. I can barely plan 2 weeks in advance. I wouldn't trust me to plan my whole life. Like, I never would have guessed that I'd be married with three little kids at this age doing some startup thing. Like, I never would have guessed this, but I am like so much happier than I would have been in my previous job, just continuing to work. So yeah, I don't know. You get a lot of things out of it, but the goal of it is not what you get out of it. The goal is what you give from it. So
that's
God
awesome.
Gets out of it, I guess.
Yeah. Thank you for taking me through that. I feel like in the world of being, you know, evangelical or trying to reach out, I think no one really talks about that. You know, people talk about Christianity and wanting other people to become Christian, but no one talks about, you know, who you become through faith or who you become through prayer. So that was a really amazing depiction.
You know, Shia LaBeouf has recently had a really fascinating conversion experience, but he talks about this a lot more beautifully than I have. But, you know, he says he, in his previous life, he was just trying to make himself happy. Mm. And it was just killing him. He was just like, he was just pursuing all these things that don't actually make you happy. The things, you can receive them with joy, but the things themselves don't make you happy. And he says he's totally changed his mindset to like, not how can I be happy, but how can I be useful? Like, mm-hmm. how can I help? And that thing, like that switch does actually then make you happy. And it's such a funny, you know, you're sad sometimes, but there's this joy, there's this underlying, you're never like, you don't despair. It's just this.
It's a great life hack.
There's this beautiful, yeah. And there's this thing that I think Christianity does, the church does, where it's like you take the faith, you take Christianity and you water it down because you don't want it to be too intimidating. And I actually think this is right in a lot of different ways. Like someone who's agnostic or atheist, they might get turned off. I at least did when somebody would say like God too many times or I'm blessed too many times. It's like, you must be one of those Jesus-y guys or whatever. And so we dumb it down to like, well, let's just like, you know, maybe interested in finding some peace or something, which works for, you know, I think a chunk of people. There's this other chunk though, where the radical nature of the faith, this crazy, crazy thing where like people went and lived in caves for their whole life on like a loaf of bread a year. Like that is what people did. People died hanging upside down on a cross. I mean, like there's this crazy, crazy faith. And that is also like, to me, it's really effective at being like, what? And there's something really interesting about, and we have this prayer that we start every Lent with, which is this litany of humility. And it is the hardest prayer it's the hardest prayer in the world, for me at least. And which maybe says something, but there's this, like everybody thinks they're humble. Like you're like, oh, I don't think I'm better than it. Like I'm not that great at anything. I've got a lot of flaws, whatever. I'm humble. I'm not arrogant. I'm not cocky. But then you pray this prayer and it's like, well, what does real humility mean? Mm. And real humility in this prayer is like, I want someone else to be more successful than me. Not only someone else, I want everyone else to be more successful than me. Really? I want everybody else to be more successful than me? That sounds like, and then the next line is, I want everyone to be loved more than I am loved. Really? Mm-hmm. You want everybody to be, like, maybe my daughter, I want to be loved more than I love, maybe my wife, but like everybody, just the guy down the street? No. And so there's like, man, I am so far away from this. And that's really what the gospel is. It's like, Jesus takes the faith of the Old Testament and he says, no, there's a much higher bar. Like, yes, this is all true, but there's a much higher bar. Don't be angry. Don't look at another woman with lust in your eyes. Like, there's so much higher a bar to what we're called to, which is intimidating, but at the same time is like inspiring. It's like, yeah, it's like, okay, well, maybe I can try. Maybe I can get like a little bit of the way there. So anyway, I think it's a cool pitch that we don't usually lean into.
Alex, this has been so interesting and so enjoyable. I'm really interested to hear what the listener of the podcast thinks, because your story is incredible and I've enjoyed listening to it. I wish you all the success in the world, really.
Oh, well, glory to God. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Enjoy your evening and thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Dine For the podcast. For more information on the show, the guests, and the podcast, head to todinefortv.com. You can find us on Instagram at todinefortv and Facebook at todinefor with Kate Sullivan. Thanks to the sponsors of To Dine For the podcast, American National Insurance. Special thank you to producer and sound editor John Golmer. To the loyal followers of this program, cheers, stay hungry, and stay inspired. I'll see you back at the table soon.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.